The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
And welcome. Welcome back. It's now time for our weekly installment of Consider This, consider-this.ca. If you want to follow it on the website, you can do so. My guest in the studio is Professor of E-Journalism at Loyalist College, Rob Washburn, as well as this week's special guest, the Deputy Chief of Police for the town of Cobourg. He's been a very, very busy man over the last couple of weeks, and we will talk to him about what's happening there. He's also the recipient of the Order of Merit of Police Forces. We're going to talk to him about his award. Before we get to that, here are Cheap Trick with Dream Police on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
Oh,
Dream Police, 1979, right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. And we are pleased to introduce, welcome back to the studio, actually, the Deputy Police Chief for the town of Colbert. Yeah, let's give it up for him, Paul Vandegraaff. We got the best audience on radio.
Absolutely.
We absolutely do. So welcome to the show, Chief, Deputy Chief. I'm just going to call you Paul, actually.
I always say to everybody, it was good enough for Mom, so it's good enough for everybody else.
Okay. Well, Mom's probably got the three names she calls whenever she's upset.
Yeah, right? There's a few. We can't use them on the radio, though, I don't think.
Well, welcome to the studio. Glad to have you here. I know we've had some issues with scheduling. But we're going to talk today about the Order of Merit for Police Forces, established in October of 2000, almost at 0,000 there. The Order of Merit of Police Force honors the leadership and exceptional service or distinctive merit displayed by the men and women of Canadian Police Services and recognizes their commitment to this country. The primary focus is on exceptional merit, contributions to policing and community development. And Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II is the Order's sovereign. The Governor General is its Chancellor and Commander, and the Commissioner of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police is also the Principal Commander. But now this award is an award for community engagement. It's for being an active member of the police service while at the same time promoting and developing a commitment to the community and community development. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, exactly. It's as I said earlier, it's a truly humbling experience for to be nominated, let alone be selected to join the ranks of great recipients before me. The award really comes to what I have always said is grassroots policing, and one of the reasons I made the move from Belleville to Cobourg was to have the opportunity to work with Chief Liu, and that we are kind of two peas in the pod, and that we think this way. We think a whole culture of community relationship building. And I've done this thing without even really knowing I've been blending. I wasn't that intuitive to know when I started policing in the early 90s, but you got involved in small things, be it a neighborhood watch of my first house. And then it was hockey, and it was purely selfish. I was going to coach hockey for my son, but then I saw a need, got involved in working with the board and working with some fiduciary responsibility around that. Next thing you know, I'm the vice president of House League because I didn't think that those kids who just wanted to come out to hockey once or twice a week were really treated as fairly as the superstars.
No, absolutely.
So I found a cause and made it mine. And then next thing you know, I was sponsored to join the Rotary Club of Belleville. And the same thing, I saw some areas where I really wanted to dig in and dug in on community development and sweat equity issues. And as things happen in my life, my wife always says, be careful what you ask for. They'll just tell you to do it. And I was a president of the Rotary Club of Belleville, which was a great honor to be. And then I enveloped that in my work, regardless if I was in traffic services or if I was a patrol sergeant or if I was in community services. It was just really important to engage the community in any way, shape, or could. And it's funny, moving to Cobourg, my son and I went through the Northumberland Mall the first time, and nobody knew me. And he said it was the first time in his life he actually went shopping with me and didn't get stopped 15 times down the hall. And then he came back 3 weekends ago and we were walking downtown and he goes, oh my God, it's 10 years ago in Belleville. How do you know everybody? It's not anything that I do. I just like to be approachable. I like people to tell me what they think, whether it's good or bad. And at the end of the day, somebody is wise enough or stupid enough to make a great nomination for me for this Order of Merit, and truly it is humbling. I my wife and I walked into the grounds of Rideau Hall, and it just really sank in.
Do you recall how you found out?
Sure. Yeah, it's a pretty lengthy process in the sense that it's really difficult to keep secret because there's interviews that get done and there's a process. So the chief was kind enough to actually nominate me, and he also being a recipient of the order or the member of the order, so he saw the need and the recognition that it deserves, so he made it pushed me through the process, and then like anything else, it goes through the provincial process, so people will say, hey, I heard your name's on the list, congratulations, good for you, and then it goes to the national committee, and there's good people on the national committee and that I know, and next thing you know, I'm getting the request from the Governor Generals to sit down and talk about the day.
So was it by mail? Did you get a call?
Phone calls, emails, invites, security clearances to get into Rideau Hall, and I had the great fortune to bring my father, who was in the Mounties for 37 years.
Wow.
So he got to join me on the day with my wife, and we got to go there, and it truly hits you, like, we went up the night before, and I went to university in Ottawa. My wife and I met in Ottawa, so it's kind of a second home stomping ground for us. So it was kind of non-event. And then we walked down the hall, the grounds of Rideau Hall, and to see the Governor General's foot guards there and personal aide de comps who wheel you through the room. And then you walk into the room where great recipients of the Order of Canada have sat and have walked the same length of carpet. And, you know, it kind of hits you then. I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm sitting in the same seat potentially as all the Order of Canada recipients. And the fact that I sat in the same room that Bob Cole sat in the week after and got the Order of Canada, I thought it was pretty, being a hockey nut, I thought that was pretty exciting.
Well, you know, you mentioned sweat equity, and I think that is something that a lot of people, again, I got to put hats off to our community for this, because, you know, sweat equity is a huge part of this community, whether it's volunteering to build homes for Habitat for Humanity or doing what you've done with the police service. I mean, this patrolling by foot that was introduced by you, which had some pushback, I have to say. But the reality is it has done more to ingrain the, you know, we were always raised, if you're in trouble, you know, find an adult or go to a police officer that you can talk to. Yeah. And it being in a community now where that's actually very possible. You know, you hear about what's happening in the U.S. You see all the crazy stuff going on down there, the disconnect between community and law enforcement down there, where they really focus on the enforcement angle. But here, you know, in the town of Cobourg, we have police officers. They're peace officers. And that is one of the things I have always been very happy about and marveled at when you came here. And this isn't something that is new with you, but it's also something that you've helped to sort of, if you will, water those flowers and make that blossom.
Let's be clear. The chief, Chief Lou, brought a culture, and he wanted help. So he reached out, and I was lucky enough to be selected to come here. So that's great. We share the same philosophy. Yeah, there's pushback. This is not, and it's nothing against the officers, the men and women. It's how they were. I always called it raised in policing. We're raised in a very military-esque time of policing. Mm-hmm. Where this was not. So this is what they've been trained. This is what their coach officers told them. This is what their peers expected of them. This is what the cultural norm in policing, not just in Cobourg, but across Canada, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're on a change, and it's a tough change, and it's pushing a heavy boulder up a slippery hill, because it's institutional change we're trying to conduct here. And as much as the foot patrol, it's an old thing. That's the way policing used to be done.
That's right. Yeah.
I don't see that as our greatest victory. I actually see our greatest victory is an idea that we did bring. And it was one officer in Belleville who made it tremendously successful, and it was the breakfast clubs. That is the single best thing that I think our men and women who were resistant at first, we're lucky here. We don't have 75 calls every hour. The men and women aren't scrambling all over and 13 police shootings a month and all these things. We have the time so that every day a uniformed police officer is in a school in the town of Cobourg, and enjoying the nutrition break, breakfast club, whatever the school calls it, and doing nothing else but just being there. Well, that has morphed into now when our men and women arrive at the schools, they're actually shooting hoops, they're actually doing literacy, they're actually doing some bullying prevention stuff, they're doing bike rodeos, to the point now, and I was never so proud to hear it, and I was at a YMCA meeting, and a woman came up to me after our training session, and my wife and I were there, and she said, I just want to say to you that I was late getting to school today. My kids go to Terry Fox, and they were really, really, really angry. And I go, "What? Why?" And she goes, because they were going to miss the officer at the breakfast club. And she says, my kids, I was at first offended. My kids are, we don't need to go to the breakfast club. We can afford breakfast. But no, it became the event that morning. So it destigmatized the rich kid, poor kid, who needs to eat well, who doesn't need to eat well. And it just makes it an event. And that has been absolutely tremendous. And the Cobourg Police, the men and women of the Cobourg Police Service have been recognized by the school board earlier this week for our involvement in that. That is making lasting relationships. And we always say that at the time of crisis, if you need your community behind you and you haven't developed a relationship,
that's right,
forget it. It's too late. You build the relationships when things are good. So when things are not so good, the community rallies around us. So last week, we had two very tragic incidents in our community. Terrible events. And the community rallied around both our officers and those families. And I look around, and once you get out of the smoke and the fire of the event, and you look around and you see the pouring of support for the community, for poor Brody Locke and the vigil that happened, and the fact that we had off-duty OPP officers and Cobourg officers stay at the end of their shift to assist and ensure that that was a safe event. That's relationship building.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more of our conversation with the Deputy Chief of the Police Service here in Cobourg. Deputy Chief Paul Van de Graaff is our guest. We'll be back in just a moment.
Want to listen to Dame Nellie Melba singing Mimi from La Boheme in 1907? Audrey Hepburn telling you what's worse than the blues. The last time Judy Garland sang Over the Rainbow. I'm Pat Bryan, and I call my show I Know What I Like, and I like the magic of radio. 8 o'clock every Sunday evening. There's nothing else like it on the air. Right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
You can wish it wasn't so, but winter will soon be at your door. Now is the perfect time to ensure your home comfort system is ready. If your furnace is more than 10 years old, it may be time to consider a new one. For a limited time, receive up to $1,500 in cash rebates with the purchase of a new comfort system from Pritchard's Climate Care. Call Pritchard's Climate Care at 905-885-8216 or visit pritchard-mechanical.com. At Pritchard's, we're not just your home climate care experts, we're your neighbors.
In 1776, England lost her American colonies.
In 1964, the British took them back. Coming Thursday, October the 13th at the Capitol Theatre, The British Invasion is live on stage.
Jeff Scott and the Buddy Ray Vaughans pay tribute to the Stones, Herman's Hermits,
the Dave Clark Five, the Hollies, Petula Clark,
and of course,
the Beatles!
Thursday, October the 13th at the Capitol.
We're the radio station that's all about Northumberland. Listen every day for local news, interviews with local newsmakers, music by local artists, and so much more. We are Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
And welcome back to the Drive Time. My guest is Paul Vandegraaff, the Deputy Chief of Police for Town of Cobourg, and of course Rob Washburn, my regular co-host for our weekly installment of Consider This. Before the break, you're talking about the Breakfast Club and how at first it was difficult, but now we're getting more officers. Has it gone to the point where we actually have officers now lining up or saying, hey, wait a minute, I haven't had my week yet?
So what happens is the shift working the day is just has that as a regular assignment, just like they would be dispatched to a break and enter, just like they'd be dispatched to a foot patrol.
Okay.
An officer gets this. Sure, there's going to be officers that are more inclined, if you will, to go and hang out at breakfast clubs, and others aren't. And that's okay, because it takes many different tunes to make a great song. So we'll take everybody. But the officers have always had the community well-being in the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
How they want to deliver that service is different for each and every officer. It's a slow move. I'm sure if you ask the rank and file, some would say, hey, this is a good idea. Others would say, well, this is the stupidest thing. We can outlive him. But that's policemen. And I always joke about it with policemen. The two things policemen hate and policewomen hate is the way things are and change.
There you go. How is the school determined? I mean, which is it a different school every day?
Yeah, that's right. So we have a list from all the schools and when they're what time and what day. So every school gets a day. And sometimes a couple days a week, there's two. And that's okay. So we get two of them if we can. The schools also understand that if something happens, we can't be there. So it's we don't plan around our event, mm-hmm. but then our two officers are so engaged in the high schools and those we have like planned assemblies. We're in there. We're really working closely with the high schools to try to create new relationships within the high schools. Mm-hmm. Constable Franchella, he's become a bit of a folk hero amongst the high schools when he wheels up on his motorcycle. And he was one of the biggest naysayers. It was great when I came here and we talked about it and he kind of talked about it. And Frank won't BS anybody. He thought the schedule in the CMU unit was a better schedule than 12-hour shifts. But now, if I ever have to transfer him out of there, it's going to be dragging him.
One of the most interesting components of the community engagement piece is to look at other police forces, and in particular down the state, some of the things that have been going on between communities and
terrible
the police.
Things down there.
I wonder if you could provide us some insight as to, from your perspective, as to what's going on and why, and maybe what are the solutions.
You know, if I had that magic answer, I would be peddling my fish oil or my down in the States. But they're going through some critical times right now, and it's policing. And I present this. And if you take a picture of a police officer from the 1950s, or the 1960s, and you see what they look like, what they wear, and what their car looks like,
mm-hmm.
and I know I don't like the fact that they're all white men who have post-military experience. That mm-hmm. part of the policing world I'm not very happy about in the 60s, but let's look at it. And then you look at a police officer today. Every police officer has semi-automatic weapons, which we need, multiple different types of vests, patrol carbines, machine guns, C8s, conducted energy weapons, commonly known as tasers, pepper sprays, batons, mm-hmm. thigh holsters, ballistic vests, ballistic helmets. We have officers who refuse to identify themselves in a tactical outfit. So they're wearing balaclavas. And compare that image to what we see coming back from Afghanistan from our men and women who serve this country in wars. They look exactly alike.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the militarization of policing is part of that relationship breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason. I wear a bulletproof vest every day I come to work, but I wear an inner carrier. I don't wear an exterior carrier unless I have to. We have an operational design. So when I'm out operational with my full gun belt, I'll put my exterior carrier on. But every day, I'm armed, but I wear an interior vest because I don't want that militarization of policing. I find it one of the big impediments.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these communities in the States who are struggling, they haven't done that relationship building piece, or the relationships have fallen apart to a point that when anything happens, there's no right. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to suggest for a moment that a police officer potentially didn't do the right thing. And I'm also not going to suggest for a moment that some poor person of the community wasn't mistreated. There's multiple cases, unfortunately. Some of them I'm kind of going, wow, what are you guys thinking? And the other ones I'm thinking, wow, God, give the guy a break. He's alone at dark. He's like the most recent one, and the fellow was holding a wallet in a gun stance. Like, well, why are you doing that? And that's really awkward for me. But I'm also a strong proponent for the community's right to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see violence. I don't want to see looting. I don't want to see other crime.
Mm-hmm.
But the community has to have the right to speak. And the police need to be heard as well, because they're a community in the community. But if you create great relationships, so if something tragic were to happen with a police-involved shooting here in Coburg, I'm firmly of the belief that our community would give us the time for SIU and in province of Ontario, but would give us the time to do our job. And at the end of the day, we'll be judged. But I believe the relationship is such that we develop grassroots people that say, hey, we're doing the right things. And generally the populace understands that we carry guns for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Let me follow up, because this ties in. Is there any advantage to wearing cameras? Because that seems to be something that a lot of push for in Toronto, but also in the States. They're saying, you know, we don't always get the perspective, and this will provide greater transparency. Is that a solution?
Yeah, that's another show. It's tough enough to get me for one show, but get me back for another show when we talk about body-worn cameras, because, yes, that is the rhetoric around body-worn cameras, is that it'll create that relationship. You know, the minute you don't release a video for any particular reason, that relationship's falling apart with body-worn cameras. The body-worn cameras is not a perfect technology.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at the Police Executive Research Forum, PERF is the acronym. In the States, there's lots of literature on body-worn cameras. I'm undecided on whether body-worn cameras truly will develop stronger relationships or not. I think the officers overall would say that it's going to show them what they did was right. But it's just going to take that moment in time that transpired over 3 seconds, and it's going to give probably a lot of untrained people 10 minutes to dissect every second when the officer made the decision at 3. There is not the statistical from Toronto study. There's not this that was released. There's not the statistical response to prove that it reduced complaints. There's not the statistical support to say that it greatly reduced use of force incidents. Because they got to remember, for Toronto, we'll say this, for their millions of police interactions, police community interactions, very few, I think it's less than 6%, end up with physical confrontation. So we got to put it in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, if I was a guy on the road or a girl on the road, I think today I would want a body camera. I think I would want to have a body camera on. But then again, I'm a type of person that would have an opportunity to speak with somebody on the community who maybe is of the criminal element, if you will. And I've always had the opportunity, and we joked about my son going through the mall. I would be bumping into these swarthy-looking individuals, and my son would go, who was that? And I always said, oh, it was John or Steve or Rob or whoever it was. And it might have been a reaction or an interaction I had with that person 2 weeks ago where I arrested them. But I treat people with respect. I've always treated people with respect. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I've had to use force. At the end of the day, I got a job to do. And just carve your life that way. And that's what has to happen. We have to get to a point where the public understand. And at the same time, police have to understand that there's going to be public outcry when things happen. And something has to happen in the States. I don't have the answer, but I really feel for the communities. They're being ripped apart by this. And I also feel for the officers who are just mm-hmm. trying to do the right thing.
Social media has played a huge role in this, too, because people have recorded things, not necessarily the officers with the body camera, but, you know, bystanders and individuals. They record these things, and then they get put out into the court of public opinion to be dissected. How do you see that working as a dynamic
I always say jokingly when I speak to the groups at Loyalists, oh, but go the grace of God, go I, that there wasn't Facebook when I went to university. But it's a different time. And we teach high school kids about their social media presence. What I always say is that don't judge what you see on YouTube, because you need to see the entire interaction, good or bad. And listen, we don't have to go look too far down the highway to an incident on a streetcar very recently. The video showed that there was what it was, and that, and my personal opinion is just a personal, and I feel for everybody in that case, but. At the end of the day, I don't like YouTube videos for police interaction, because it's generally just the piece that's the most alarming or the most sensational. Show the whole tape. And if the whole tape shows the officer did something wrong, well, then we're accountable.
Well, you mentioned community, and you mentioned different types of policing. And you know, there's the Black Lives Matter movement that's causing some concern in Toronto right now with police services there. And can we talk about the difference between what it would be for you here in this community as opposed to the mega city, as it were? What are the differences in the challenges? I mean, not just the number of calls, but in terms of interaction with the public.
That's a powerful. Black Lives Matter is a powerful organization, and they have a very direct message they want to be heard. And their message is right to be heard. It's important, because obviously if everything was perfect, we wouldn't need to have personal interest group, public interest groups to remind us of issues. But I'm a firm believer in, it's no different than when I was asked to manage labor disputes or strikes. You met with both sides of the party. So you would say, okay, management, these are the rules. Strikers, these are the rules. Now we're going to get along fine, and these are the ground rules that we're going to set. And I think that's exactly what has to happen. I think we have to create the opportunity for people to voice their opinion in a peaceful manner. If that's a march down Yonge Street or if it's a march down Elgin Street, then I think we have to allow that. It's part of what everybody's fought for in this country, is the right to be heard. At the same time, they have to respect everybody else's wishes to be able to meander down that street or to engage in their event. And we should be very careful in mixing the two. So the big thing was the Pride Parade and the police presence in Toronto with Black Lives Matter and deals that were made at the last, in the 11th hour or whatever. And I think it's unfortunate that one group would indicate that another group couldn't invite who they wanted to their event. And it just seems like a big mess, but...
Well, it does, and I think the point with Black Lives Matter, and again, just in last week's presidential debate, I mean, the president candidate was talking about stop and frisk and how it reduced all of these crimes, and he said he had all these numbers, and yeah, there are maybe some empirical numbers, but there is a disproportionate number of people who are non-Caucasian who are being stopped and asked about ID and things of that. Is that a similar problem in Toronto? Is the problem to the same extent in Toronto? Are you aware?
I'm not that aware. I've obviously heard, and we've done some. I've done my own reading and research about the carding phenomenon in Toronto and the larger cities. And I firmly believe that police officers have great experience, and they have great instincts, and they act on those instincts. But I've always said it shouldn't be an issue. If you have an articulable cause to stop someone and speak with them, then do it. And you should track down. You should track that you had an interaction with Rob Washburn at 3 o'clock in the morning when he was driving his car and you stopped. And the officer should have a note of that. Collecting data for the sake of data scares me. Not the typical policeman, obviously.
Well, let me quantify. Because the reason I mentioned that is when I first moved here, one of the things that I saw on a pretty consistent basis, and again, no reflection on the work that you've done and Chief Liu, but I was seeing kids being stopped by police officers. I mean, vividly, one kid I saw walking along King Street from my storefront between Division Street and my storefront being stopped three times by different officers, either one driving this way, one driving that way. Same thing. Where are you going? What's your name? Let's see some ID. And I thought to myself, well, here's a kid who's just walking down the freaking street, and he's been stopped three times. And you know, when I watch these Black Lives Matter protests, this is the concern that these people have, is that they're arbitrarily being stopped on the street. They're being quizzed about who they are, where they're going. And I always thought to myself, you know, that is, you know, is it just that the officers aren't aware of the rights of individuals?
The officers are. So I want to go back to relationship building, and I'll try to simplify this as much as I can understand it. But you have a group of youths seated on a street corner downtown Toronto, and regardless of what skin color is, they get stopped. And the police ask them, who are you? What are you doing? 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 Okay, one time that's a bunch of kids going, well, that was okay, whatever. And then the next cop comes by and does the same thing. And this time he starts writing names down in their book. Well, hold on here. Why? Like, what have I done? So now we get the obvious question, why me? And then 2 days later, the kid comes by again, or the cop comes by again and sees the kid. And the kid says, you know what? Screw you. Yeah. I'm not saying anything. And now the entry is negative. Paul Vandergraaff was negative, was resistant with police. And that gets tracked.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next time a cop checks that guy for no particular reason or for any particular reason, it's Paul Vandergraaff, last interaction was negative. Well, come here. And now we're into a physical or a push-shove or the Mexican standoff. But you hate police. No, I don't. I hate it. And then it becomes, so I don't care what color the person is or what race the person is.
Mm-hmm.
That's wrong. Because they're not developing a good relationship. So I would hope our officers who stopped that same person three times,
mm-hmm.
were responding to an event. He just happened to look like the person who was doing it, and it was just a really bad circumstance. Or the officers were stopping him because of the time of day. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. You're walking down. Obviously, that's not in your case. You're,
mm-hmm.
And it's about relationship building. And tell, like, this whole legislation that's coming out January 1st, it is what it is, and I understand why we're there. But at the same time, I don't see the big change for us. Like, all of our officers are going to go through hours of training, and they're going to do e-learning, and
mm-hmm.
they're going to issue receipts to people, obviously for the right reasons, because we're into a problem. But at the end of the day, hey, what are you doing? Why does it matter? Well, I kind of think it's odd that you're walking down the street in July in a winter coat, backpack, and a toucan. That seems odd to me. So now are we dealing with somebody who's homeless and he has all of his life's belongings on him? Are we dealing with somebody who has a significant mental health issue that maybe needs some help on? Or are we a person who's in a medical issue and we need to talk to that person? So articulate that. That's why we go back to articulate the stop. I'm stopping you because, and it goes right back to a traffic stop.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, I'm stopping you today because we are conducting radar. And guess what? You're not obeying the speed limit, driver's license, ownership, insurance. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's that easy. Yeah, there are those critical times where you're not going to have the chance to do the hi, welcome to Walmart speech. But those are few and far between.
What about those? I mean, our community is fairly demographically neutral compared to the complexity of a large urban center like some that we were talking about earlier in the States and in Toronto. How much difference does that make in terms of your ability to do the kinds of community engagement programs as compared to other places where it's far more complex far different?
So as a police agency, and I sit on the provincial constable selection system, so we're setting guidelines or best practices for how to hire people. If you're trying to ingratiate yourself with an ethnic culture and try to get buy-in and culture and cultural acceptance, you can parade the 26-year police officer who went to Carleton University and is as white as the shirt as he wears and probably isn't going to have a whole lot of standing, if you will, right off the bat. However, if you were to accurately recruit from that community, make that community feel welcome in your agency, it'll come over time. And it's not going to come overnight. It will come over time. It's remarkable that within the last month, we are allowing police women in Canada to wear a hijab to work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it sounds like a groundbreaking thing, but at the end of the day, like, why are we even talking about that? Is that even an issue?
But
it is, because we have to ingratiate ourselves with the various cultural groups, and we mm-hmm. have to reach out to them, and we have to. Judge Graydon, and I know I knew him as a defense counsel in Belleville. Judge Graydon said something when we always get him to swear in our new recruits, and he makes a little speech, and he's defense counsel, so he's a bit edgier than some others. He says policing is the only career, the only job, where respect is given, not earned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really, really prophetic when you think about it. If you want to be a good banker, you'll develop a reputation as being a good banker. You'll have good clients, word of mouth, you'll get a bigger client base. Policing is the only job where the minute the member puts the uniform on and puts the gun belt on and responds to a call for service, that generally, I'm going to say a high percentage, the community respects that individual. Gives them, hands over the respect willingly because of the position, mm-hmm. and they've done nothing to earn it.
But isn't there also the fact that in larger urban centers, there's a complexity to the type of policing that has to be delivered, whereas in a small rural area like we have, it's a pretty straightforward. I mean, we have a certain population. There's not a lot of certain types of crimes. And is there, by making it more straightforward or more simplistic, then you get to do a lot more community development work?
You know what?
Or is that just false?
I think that's false. I think every community is is difficult. Every community brings a different. I think the remote communities in the north of our older fellows turn the map over before Google Maps. That 2/3 of the province that lives on the backside of the map. I think the police officers in those communities who try to create relationships in the First Nation communities, that's a struggle.
But
that's an incredible struggle, tough.
What makes it difficult here? What are the things that you're seeing?
In Cobourg, what makes it difficult here?
If we're all difficult, then.
Cobourg is a different town in that we have a retiring population from Toronto that may come with preconceived ideas or issues from where they came from, be it Ajax, Whitby, downtown Toronto. And there's not a lot, in my opinion, I've talked about economic development. The young people struggle to stay here. Like they seem to go away for work and they seem to come back. The Cobourg has that magnet. They come, they're born, they're raised, they go to CCI, they go to St. Mary's, they graduate, they go to university or college, or they do what they do. They go somewhere else and then they come back. And so our struggle here is engaging our community, and it's a very diverse community in that we have a lot of newcomers to Cobourg. Not necessarily newcomers to Canada, but we have newcomers to Cobourg. We have a youth population which is somewhat, it's very engaged at one level, it's disengaged at another level. And Cobourg is the community hub for Northumberland County as far as social assistance and social service. So we bring the economically struggling class come to Cobourg for their services. And we know that there's a huge issue about housing, affordable housing in Northumberland County, and there's great people doing great work on that. We know that we would love more entry-level kind of economic work for people so they don't have to leave our town. So these are the struggles we have. We have a very migrant population. We can get talking about Port Hope, Cobourg, and that whole Hatfield-McCoy thing, but our criminals know no bounds, and our people know no bounds. Mm-hmm. And it's so that's a real struggle for us, and we work for it. But because our crime, I should say, our reported crimes, or our crime criminal statistics in Cross Canada are decreasing, and Cobourg's are continually staying low, our non-crime stats are rising. And because, for instance, with the mental health issues we face in our community, there isn't enough community resource for the mental health right in our community, we're displacing our people to Peterborough. Mm-hmm. That's difficult. That's really difficult. So our officers are spending a lot of time on what we call non-crime incidents, being in mental health and all these types of issues.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more of our conversation. You're listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio. This is Canada's only holistic political chat.
Hello, friends. I'm Lauren Fevens. As you join me each week on Sentimental Journey, your emails and letters tell me how cherished memories quickly surface when a special song from your past is played. So come along for more of those memories on this week's Sentimental Journey.
Heard Sunday mornings at 10 on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.
Hi, this is Lane with what's happening this week. Thursday at the Bewdley Legion, they have a euchre at 6:30. Cobourg has the Ukulele Club, the Cukes, Cat and Fiddle at 7 p.m. Come on in and borrow a uke. Friday, the Cobourg Legion has a roast beef dinner from 5 till 6:30. In Bethesda United Church, they have a euchre at 7 o'clock. Admission includes snacks. Saturday, the Grafton Anglican Church has their annual pie sale, open at 9 a.m. Come early for a good selection. In Port Hope, your independent grocer has a pumpkin drive. Proceeds go to the Northumberland Hospital Lab. Monday, a forest turkey trot at the Boy Scout Camp on 45. Fun, safe way to enjoy nature with a 5K and a 2.5K run for teens, adults, and kids. If you have an event, you can reach us at info@northumberland897.ca. This is Lane with what's happening this week.
Keep your dial locked right here on 89.7 Truly Local Radio.
And welcome back to the conversation right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. My guest, Paul Vandegraaff, the Deputy Chief of Police for the town of Cobourg, and the recipient of an Order of Merit of Police Services. Now, you got
The member.
Okay, so just to clarify for the listeners, the member of the Order of Merit recognizes exceptional service or performance of duty over an extended period of time, usually at a local or regional provincial level. The badge of honor is the same as that of the Order of Merit. Military merit, a blue enameled straight end cross, and annulus in red, surmounted by St. Edward's crown. So there you go. That's what the award looks like anyway. But the key part of this is your career in building community.
Funny when back in I taught at Loyalist many years ago, and we always differentiated between crime prevention through environmental design, and that's changing your lights and cutting down hedges and making your house less attractive than your neighbors for people that want to break in. And we all kind of scoffed with the crime prevention through social development. And when you teach the book, you would always say, oh, yeah, then there's that other thing, but nobody could really put their finger on it. Well, it's taken about 10 or so years, but the province has realized now that, yeah, that environmental stuff is important, but if we're not developing communities, then mm-hmm. we're not going to fix communities. So right now we have a very, very active situational table or a hub, community hub. And what it does is it brings groups from all different walks of life to the table. Children's Aid Society, Habitat for Humanity, mm-hmm. YMCA, probation, parole, the Crown's Office, et cetera, Cornerstone, et cetera, and we all come to the table and you bring the issue that you're facing, that repeat issue, that recidivism that keeps happening over and over and over, and you put it onto the table and say, does anybody else dealing with this person or this event or this family? And those who have a stake stay behind, and then we share information openly at that table, and we look for a response. And then the goal is that you have an immediate response to that. So you discuss the problem, you come up with an action plan, and you walk out of that meeting, and someone's taking action on the plan. And the OPP have really taken a great leadership role here locally, and under the Inspector Darling, and it's tremendous in that we are actually starting to see significant changes to people's crisis, whatever their life crisis is, by just bringing all of the parties to the table, because policing can't fix it, probation mm-hmm. can't fix it, the Children's Aid Society can't fix it, but collectively we can.
What are some of the issues that you're dealing with now? Can you share any of those?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Without names, I can talk to you. For instance, you'll have a youth who's now suddenly struggling with truancy in school. Mm-hmm. We're encountering them being out late hours of the night. Maybe they're getting arrested for minor thefts or minor events or drunk in public. And then we incorporate the mental health counselors at the school, and we understand that, yes, there's been some talk around potential addiction issues or there's some real family discord. So what we do is you bring the parties together and you look to say, how are we going to help Paul Vandegraaff today and what can we do for him? And do we need to provide some respite care for him? Does he need to find a place to go that maybe home isn't the best place right now mm-hmm. due to that dynamic? Or maybe we got to get him into some addiction counseling. Or maybe there's a bullying issue in the school that's been undetected. Or there's been a relationship breakup with a girlfriend that the school's kind of missed or something. And mm-hmm. that's why he's all of a sudden skipping school and he's being truant and he's causing grief. Mm-hmm. So versus us arresting him, this always was the problem. Somebody would do something minor and would be arrested. And we'd be put before the courts and released on conditions. One of the conditions generally for young offenders always was a curfew. And then you'd breach them because they're out after the curfew, and you put them back into bail court. And then he's released on a similar thing. And then you breach him again for a curfew. So at the end of the day, he's got like two or three breach of undertakings recognizance, which are serious offenses. Mm-hmm. And the initial offense is really minor. So you develop this pretty lengthy criminal record over something that really, what is the issue? Yeah, you shouldn't have stole or you shouldn't have kicked the window in. We all agree that. Mm-hmm. But you weren't obeying a curfew because when you went home at night, there was no power on. You were freezing. Mom was in an abusive relationship. Dad had an addiction issue. So I can't sit there. So they got up and they just walk, just like we said at the top of the hour. They're mm-hmm. just walking down the street,
yep.
and they start getting checked and they start getting breached as they get called, and it creates this bigger problem for mm-hmm. this young lad or young person. And that's what the situational tables, and that's what community crime prevention through social development really is all about. And I think really untrained, unexpert, that's what I was trying to do. And I used to always say to the kids when I coached them, and I coached them from like 7 to 8, 9, 10. At 7, they just wanted to push the buttons on the cruiser and make the sirens go off. And then at 15, they would talk to me about maybe becoming a police officer. And last year, I was really kind of proud that three kids I taught went to Loyalist, and two of them came to Cobourg for their placement for the Police Foundations program. I thought that was pretty great that I remember. I got pictures of them at the novice mm-hmm. hockey team, and so that's a great award. That's a fantastic piece of an event in my career. Mm-hmm. My career. So it just tells me I've been around this job too long.
Well, you talk about the huge component of that is community, and you know we talked about differences with Cobourg. You mentioned we have a lot of people who are moving here. How hard is it as police or, service members to try and get those other people, those people who are from outside of the community, to become part of, to realize that this is not a community where you just come home every night from work and you don't give a damn about what's going on with your street or your neighborhood?
It happened today. So my wife works at a bank downtown. I just nipped in to say hello today. That's a great thing about working and living in a small town. And there's an elderly gentleman standing outside. And I walked around the corner, and I'm dressed like I am in a uniform. And I said, "Good afternoon. What's going on today?" And he looked at me as if I just smacked him. And he was just went, "What?" And I said, "Oh, nothing." So I walked in, said hello, did what I had, came back out. And he said, I'm sorry about that. But he said, "I just moved here from, I won't say where." And he says, "Police officers would never stop to say hello, let alone pat him on the shoulder and say, 'Hey, what's going on?'"
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, and we brought the foot patrols in, you brought up at the top of the hour, and the members told me at one of their meetings, they were angry. "It's boring. There's nothing on it. I know it's a small street. There's nothing to do."
Yeah.
It's like, and stores are closed. And I said, "Well, hold on here. If you're walking from Mr. Sub to Town Hall, and then from Town Hall to Oddballs, looking at the top of your boots, you're right, there's nothing to do. If you walk from Mr. Sub to Town Hall and actually go into Town Hall and talk to a few people, and then go to Oddballs, and then go up to the pool hall and see if it's open and who's there and talk to people, you just accomplished a whole pile." And some people get it right away. I'm not casting a stone that no, but they get it. And a lot of them do this. And the funny thing is I was really angry with them at the beginning, and I was going, honestly, the two biggest naysayers, I said, "You guys do this. You guys do this every day. You just don't get out of the car. You'll drive down the street. You'll know that's John. You'll wool up and you're going, 'What's going on, John?' Maybe John's a drug dealer. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's a whatever. But you do this." So all I'm mm-hmm. saying is do that to people you don't know. And the great thing about police officers is they're all hired because they're good communicators. Because all of the processes to hire police officers in the last 15 years have all been about communication skills.
Well, that's incredible. We're going to take our last break of the hour. When we come back, we'll try and wrap this baby up. You've been listening to The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat. My guest in studio, Paul Vandegraaff, the Deputy Chief of Police for the town of Cobourg, and Rob Washburn, my regular co-host for Consider This Live, heard every Wednesday. We'll be back in a moment.
Pull up your leg warmers, button up your jean jacket, and frost your tips, because the 80s and 90s are alive and well every Thursday night on The Retro Lounge. I'm your host, Daryl Sminsky, and I'll be playing all of your favorite 80s and 90s music, from chart-topping hits to one-hit wonders. And I'll even throw in some novelty songs from time to time. All this and more is waiting for you every Thursday night at 9 o'clock on The Retro Lounge, right here exclusively on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Deep within the Northumberland Forest, there is a secret. Created by the spring-fed artesian wells of Mill Valley and bottled by Oak Ridge Springs, Mill Valley is a sodium-free, premium spring water rich in naturally occurring electrolytes and minerals. Visit oakridgesprings.com to discover which of their local retailers carry this natural, pure spring water, or reach them at 905-349-3495.
Entering Stonewood Gallery is like visiting old and dear friends, but friends with impeccable taste. Here you'll find we feature the work of local and Canadian artisans, from custom furniture to antiques, wood turnings, jewelry, fine art, photography and giftware. It's all at Stonewood Gallery, just north of the 401 at 3311 Burnham Street North. Wednesday through Saturday, 10:30 to 5. Come in and be delighted.
Do you own a business and would like to promote it? Look no further than Northumberland 89.7. Call us at 905-372-2391 for more details.
Welcome back to the show. Something we discussed during the break, I want to bring this up because John Ford and I were talking about this yesterday. And the huge message that we've discussed today overwhelmingly is this idea of building community, embracing community, what makes building communities so important. And what John Ford and I talked about yesterday was this idea that, you know, people are so disconnected now. They're so disconnected now that, you know, I mean, you could spend every waking moment of your life in this little cubicle called the one room that you're renting somewhere, never go outside, never interact, and then never have any sense of community. And then you wonder why you don't feel safe.
Yeah. And over the years, the modernization of policing has taken the police out of the community, in that we got all this great technology, great radios, great cars, great mm-hmm. computers in the cars. Now we put smartphones on their hips and great tools and great weapons. it's incumbent upon leadership and policing at all levels to get out of the car. It's that simple. Get out of the car. If it's foot patrol, or if it's bike patrol, or it's Segway patrol, or it's walking through the mall. And when I came here, and I didn't fix anything. Like, this is a great service. It's been a great service for lots of years. The members were doing it. They just didn't capture what they were doing the right way. They were going to the CCC to watch a hockey game. And I encourage that. They sit at Tim Hortons, two or three of them together, and have a coffee. And I encourage that. What I don't encourage is to isolate themselves, be it with smartphones. So go to Tim Hortons and hover around. What I expect them is to get in Tim Hortons and talk to people and sit and chat with people and ask what they're doing and how their day is going. And the chief and I regularly make it our practice to get out into the community for one meal at least a week together. And sometimes those meals will go 2.5 hours long because you get interrupted. But that's our goal. We want people to talk to us, whatever restaurant we're sitting in. And I go to the YMCA and I put my uniform on after I work out. And people say, well, why would you do that? You're in uniform. I'm proud of my uniform. And it solicits conversations with a different group. Now, I'm there very early in the morning. And it's an older male clientele in the change room. But at first they were like, who's that guy? What's that guy? Now it's like, hey, Paul, what's this? What's that? And I get information. I get compliments about our officers, what they've done. I get the odd, why are they doing that? Question. I get the pat on the back going, phew, that was a tough week last week. And my wife and I were honored to be the strong kids chairs. And I can't not pass this hour without saying, we're almost done. We're almost there. But the strong kids is community. That's a group. That's an organization working to give everybody a chance. And that's all we're talking about is work together, enforce the law. And I'm a firm guy, and we enforce the law. We enforce it fairly, strictly. And people will often ask me, do you have a quota? Absolutely. I expect my officers to go out there and do their job. And that includes traffic enforcement. And that includes writing tickets. So is there a number? No. As many as they can if there's a problem. I don't want them sitting fishing in holes. I want them sitting at high collision intersections. That's what we post the high collision intersections. So, I'm also an enforcement guy. I'm not just a community guy. I understand that enforcement is very important in policing a culture. And it is, because some people just don't get it, like this distracted driving, which is another three-hour conversation. But they just don't get it. People just don't care. And it's the deadliest thing on our roads right now.
How difficult is it to enforce legislation when you know it's about to change, though? Like, for instance, marijuana legislation. I don't know, we've got 5 minutes left, and we probably won't get to the conversation. But the reality is here's a legislation that's been enforced for 80 years, and now there's talk that it's going to change. But you've got people out there who think it's already changed, people who know it hasn't already changed. How do you handle something like that?
Easy. Build relationships. Talk to those people who think they're going to open the weed shack. And say, listen, it's not really today. Talk to them. Peterborough, the chief and deputy in Peterborough are managing this, I think, very well. And there's, again, a whole bunch of people thought in Peterborough it was all of a sudden legal, and they opened up all these shops. And they've kind of dealt with it in a soft shoe kind of approach, as did Toronto. And you know what? The law is the law still. We need to talk about legalization versus decriminalization. We have to learn the lessons from Colorado and Washington State. There's good and bad lessons. The OECP Substance Abuse Policy Committee is doing great work on doing some studies on that. And I think we have to build relationships. We have to talk to all of the parties. We have to engage everybody. And we have to work together for an ultimate solution that if it's the right thing for our country, then we do it right, safe, and efficient. That if it's another 6 months, then don't hold Justin Trudeau accountable. You didn't get it done. I don't want to make it a political issue. If the climate says that we need to decriminalize or legalize marijuana, then we need to do it methodically. Such that if there are, just like when you open up a casino in a new community, they make sure that there's all sorts of support for those people who come addicted to gambling. We've got to do the exact same thing. We have to make sure it's not available to kids. We have to make sure there's regulations on it. And that's my soapbox.
So there you go. Rob, any last questions?
No, it's been really nice talking to you about this. We started out talking about your award, and congratulations, and it's been a really good conversation. Thanks for coming in.
No, thanks very much.
And thank you very much again. My guest, Paul Vandegraaff, the Deputy Chief of Police for the town of Cobourg. Paul, of course, you can contact him if you have questions or comments, and maybe you just want to give him a pat on the back and tell him he's doing a great job. You can do so by contacting the Cobourg Police Service. Don't call 911 to do that, though, listeners. Rob Washburn, thanks again for being my co-host, as you are. We're over two years. So this is fabulous. Thanks to the listeners out there for listening. I'm Dave Glover. Here is Grant and Smith with Keep On Running.